I'd like to convene the Customer Service and Operations Committee meeting with a motion to approve the agenda.
So moved.
Second. Motion made and seconded to approve the agenda. Those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Second item is approval of the minutes of the meetings of October the 13th and November the 3rd. Get a motion made by Mr. McKay, seconded by...
Second.
Ms. Hudgens, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
First item, vital sign scorecard for the quarter. Andrea?
Thank you. Get the presentation up there. Just as a kind of looking back over the past 18 months, we've been doing vital signs starting in June of 2010. We initially presented the vital signs on a monthly basis, and the board asked us to move more to quarterly reporting. So this is the first report presented to you on a quarterly basis, and we're really looking at 3 months kind of data and summarizing the trends for the three-month time frame. This actual report was initially scheduled to be heard about a month ago, so that, you know, time marches on and more data becomes available. It has become available, so what I'll do is kind of supplement some of the information here with new data that's become available. So, next slide, please. In terms of vital signs, as you know, links the agency's actions to our strategic goals and objectives, and it shows rolled-up system-wide trends. It doesn't necessarily reflect individual customer experience. We turn data into information for the board, why our performance changed, and what we're doing about it. That's really kind of, to us, more important than some of the up and down lines. Next slide. Okay, moving to bus on-time performance. The third quarter average for bus time on-time performance barely changed from the prior quarter, but for the year in total, we are outperforming the prior calendar year. We remain below target. And looking at the July time frame, our on-time performance, a highlight for July was our on-time performance at Landover and Southern Avenue bus garages led the way. Landover actually ran 85% on-time performance above the target of 78%, and Southern at 78%. And then in August, of course, we had the Hurricane Irene, which resulted in numerous road closures and a 5.8% magnitude earthquake. It was a busy month that disrupted normal traffic patterns. All the same, our on-time performance in August improved by 1% when compared to the prior month of July, so that's a significant improvement. December's decline is nearly the same pattern as last September of the last year, indicating routine seasonality. Traffic gets more congested as people come back to work and school from summer vacations, and performance starts to decline. Looking at the actions to improve performance, we are implementing, after the board approved it, the budget neutral actions to improve service and customer satisfaction by realigning service. Also, superintendents and service operation managers are moving away from a one-size-fits-all approach to tackling on-time performance issues and looking at strategies that fit each unique challenge. As an example, they're using real-time technology like NextBus to better manage schedules proactively. In the past, they had to wait an entire week to see performance reports, and with the new technologies, they can address things more in real time. Next slide, bus fleet reliability. Fleet reliability was down when compared to the second quarter, but has managed to, in calendar year 2010, has managed to outperform the prior calendar year for 7 of the 9 months so far this year. In looking at the important thing about fleet reliability is to look at longer-term trends. It's important to note that the fiscal year 2011 was a record-breaking year, which set the bar very high for fleet reliability. Several key factors, like adding 148 new buses, which had very few reliability issues when they went into service. That's not always the case with new buses. Sometimes you have to address challenges for new technology. Additionally, we took out some of our worst performing fleet, the 93-94 flexible fleet. For the first time this year, fleet reliability in July began to drop below the performance of the same period last year. was exacerbated by record high temperatures and some challenges we had with our new bus air conditioning systems. Then we had some record rainfall in September, which negatively impacted our electrical systems. In terms of actions, we're continuing to work with the hybrid manufacturer on the two campaigns to address those challenges. And we have, all told, I think bus maintenance has 7 improvement campaigns going right now. And I will say, looking ahead to October, we saw some significant improvement back to the levels seen in March. Again, kind of looking at data that hasn't been presented here. And we are above target in October.
Question?
Sure.
In the capital report we just saw, if I was reading it right, we've ordered a bunch of these new buses, hybrid buses, and we're continuing to buy hybrid buses. Is this a problem that's been worked out with the manufacturer before we keep buying more of these buses?
Well, the answer to the question, Mr. McKay, earlier was that the same people that are working on fixing the problems are working with the manufacturers on the new procurement. It's not the hybrid system. It's not the CNG system. It's the actual engine itself. Unfortunately, we only have one manufacturer of engines, but they're in here aggressively making the fixes, and all of those fixes should be on all any new buses that we procure here in the current buses that we're procuring and also the additional order in the spring. So I believe that the issues that we've seen will be addressed before the next new order of buses come in.
Okay, next, moving to rail on-time performance. With the exception of July, our on-time performance for rail continued a 7-month above target trend. July typically experiences a low on-time performance, again, due to hot weather and heavy tourist volumes. As the hottest month on record, this year's July weather resulted in a heat kink in the red line and an increased number of hot cars that were isolated from customers. In July, as new operators entered the system and new schedules went into effect, the Operation Control Center made schedule adjustments to keep the system running on time. Railcar availability numbers picked up in August, with 17 out of 23 weekdays meeting expected levels. Metro Rail operated consistently reliable service throughout several disruptive natural events. Again, we mentioned the tropical storm and the earthquake. And midday track work and preparation for weekend track work has impacted service to customers due to single track operation. Looking at actions to improve, our on-time performance begins with the trains leaving the first station on time. And to facilitate this, clocks are being stalled at terminals to synchronize with the Operation Control Center and to be used by terminal supervisors. The control center personnel continue to monitor the rail system operation vigilantly to encourage proper train spacing. And rail transportation is formalizing its training for supervisors to cover topics such as managing arriving and departing trains. And I would note that looking at October, the average for all lines is at the target of 90%. Rail fleet reliability improved substantially during the quarter. As you can see, the line is in a real nice upward direction there. It did have a low in July to the highest performance in September. And October performance is at 47,654 miles between failures. So it's went down slightly, but is moving in the right direction. The improvements that we've seen is largely due to progress made addressing some brake and door failures. July railcar availability was impacted by record-setting hot temperatures, and even though we've seen an 18% improvement in HVAC failures over the summer compared to the same time last year, it still presented some challenges. In August and September, the weather abated and the performance improved. Damon Cannon's team is focusing on campaigns to zero in on systems that can be readily improved. He's also implemented improvements in the shop to make the work safer and more efficient. The 2,000 and 3,000 and 6,000 K vehicle door reliability investigation is underway. Long-term solutions are being investigated that will require some lengthy operational testing, and some short-term fixes are being implemented. Things that they're doing include like additional cleaning, adjusting tolerances on spindles, and correcting all doors closed summer relays. And this work will be completed by the winter. Also, rail car maintenance is preparing wheel truing machines to fix wheels that develop flats, which is a problem in the fall. Next slide. Metro Access on-time performance remains at or above target for the quarter. The implementation of monitoring of vehicle pullout procedures continues to result, yield results, and staff continues to evaluate the program of eligibility, education, fixed route access, and providing quality service. And I'll note that for October, performance is at 93%. In terms of escalator and elevator availability, for escalators, July and August, availability remained consistent with recent months, but September showed a notable improvement, mainly due to a decrease in unscheduled maintenance. Why? We've demonstrated efficiency improvements from the recent reconfiguration of the call, service call maintenance teams into east and west regions, and this has resulted in repairs being done more quickly. In terms of elevators, as in 2010, the elevator system-wide availability trended downward in July, August, and September, suggesting a seasonal trend. However, in 2011, performance was better than 2010 for July and August. Severe weather impacted the elevator availability, especially hard in August and September. Preventive maintenance is a really good story for escalators. It reached a new high in July of 70%, remained strong in August, and then by September had reached 88%. The challenge is to sustain that level of preventive maintenance. I think we've got a real positive trend on that, and we'd like to be able to sustain that. Since July, two managers have focused exclusively on preventive maintenance planning and scheduling in order to increase this compliance and repair quality. August dip in availability was mainly due to, again, the weather, the rains, and manpower was dedicated to examine all equipment for structural damage after the August 23rd earthquake. Actions to improve, implement the new business model that you've been briefed on, continue to evaluate the management of parts to strike a balance between stockpiling parts that are needed for repairs versus parts needed for one-time fixes. And in terms of elevators, address the shortage of mechanics specializing in elevator maintenance, forming an elevator repair group, and hiring additional skilled elevator mechanics. And as you know, this week we unveiled 7 rehabbed units at Union Station and 3 new ones at Foggy Bottom. That should also help with our numbers going forward. Customer injuries, I think you heard a report on this recently from the Safety Security Committee, but the injury rate consistently improved from June through August and is below last year's average. During this time frame, most of the customer injuries occurred while riding the bus, about 44%, and they're generally due to collisions. Secondly, were caused by slips, trips, and falls, walking in the rail stations and parking facilities, using the escalators, and then riding the rail system. The bus customer injury rate decline from June to August can be linked to a decline in the number of collisions. It's very closely correlated. As bus transportation diligently focused on reducing risky behaviors by reinforcing its training for operators, and we can manage that very well with the drive cam tool that we've been using for some time now. In terms of actions, Metro's organizing a bus-to-bus campaign, reminding operators to slow down, exhibit defensive driving behavior, and exercise spatial awareness. And safety officers are partnering with bus service operation managers, making themselves more visible in certain hotspots. And looking to September, it remains stable at 1.6 million injuries per passengers. And it's actually in September half the injury rate that we experienced the same time last year, which was 3.43. Employee injuries, the next slide, is trending better at the end of the third quarter after worsening in June. During the month of June, employee injuries were above average due to increased struck by object injuries, and those are caused by multiple factors like handling objects, stepping on objects, and falling objects. In a continuing pattern, bus employees tend to represent the largest population of these injuries, second to rail transportation and then MTPD. Actions, safety presentations demonstrating the proper form to lift, push, and pull are being presented to employees. Whenever we see significant trends in the wrong direction, we do safety stand downs where we stop work for a while and talk to employees about the trends we're seeing and proper ways to safely do their jobs. We continue to provide incident and injury investigation training to supervisors and require the training instructors to conduct ride-alongs with every operator. The September rate is 4.31. crime rate, the number of crimes, and you will be getting a detailed report in 2 weeks, so I won't go too much into this, but the number of crimes in the transit system was down 18% this quarter when compared to the same months last year. The average rate of Metro bus crimes declined 9% when compared to the months of March through May. And the police continue to develop bus service bus security strategies in partnership with bus operators, such as increased patrol of plainclothes, as well as uniformed police officers. The average rate of rail system crimes declined by 5% compared to the prior quarter and has maintained a rate slightly lower than the prior year. The police have adjusted patrols and planning for the start of school, which has already happened now, shifting resources to stations with larger student populations. And parking lot crime was a little higher in June to August when compared to the prior quarter due to an increase in vehicle thefts and attempted thefts, the higher rates typical of seasonal parking lot crimes during the summer months, but did remain below the 2010 levels as the police deployed more officers. Actions to provide crime prevention information to customers and reduce the risk of vehicle break-ins. Officers are monitoring parking lots and reporting observations of valuables in vehicles via mail out to customers. So people that leave valuables in sight get a letter saying you may want to consider putting things out of sight. And the police are monitoring adjustments made to the patrol of rail stations for the start of school. Sure.
I just wanted to use this particular, to get back to the crime discussion, rate discussion. You'll notice that Metro Rail is roughly four crimes per million passengers. Bus is only about one.
That's actually the comment I was going to make. That, you know, I understood what Mr. Downs said earlier about some statistics, but the bottom line is your chance of being a victim of a crime is higher in the rail system and higher in a parking lot than on a bus, if these charts are correct.
Well, I think except that bus incidents tend to be more violent. There's not a lot of gunfire in the rail system. There is, unfortunately, in the bus system. It's apples and oranges at times.
Well, yeah, just to that point, I think there are a lot of dynamics to the question, and I appreciate your pausing to raise the point, Richard, because it's a real point, it's a real number, and when it comes to allocating resources and costs, we do have to make some choices and judgments. But there are a number of other associated issues related to that as well. And one would be, number one, how effective are we at demonstrating the relative safety of the buses? I know we make an effort at that. Crimes tend to be sensationalized, and they should draw attention. Every crime should, regardless of how many or few. And I'm not trying to minimize individual crimes. And I also think it's localized to different segments. And while it may be one in general, it might be a greater number in segments. And I don't want to make decisions without getting the granular data. And if it needs to be a targeted, laser-like effort, then that's what it is. But I don't want to shy away from costs if they're necessary to spend, and I know you don't either, so I certainly am not suggesting
you
do that, but I don't want to do that.
Nor do I. What I'm trying to make the point is we do look at the numbers, and the chief actually deploys his forces depending on where, very localized, he sees the problem. So it's that kind of flexible response that we want to use to manage.
No question about it. And it's also a community responsibility also, which we have to continue to fold into the dialogue.
And again, looking ahead to September, which is a new month of data available since this was prepared, September remains consistent and is 29% lower overall than September of 2010. Customer comment rate. The three-month customer commendation trend shows an uptick in August, particularly with the result of Metro continuing our operations following the earthquake on August 23rd. People appreciated that. Commendations were also up for paratransit for each month of the quarter. And besides July, overall customer commendation rate was above the 2010 levels. Customer complaints continued to stay below last year's trends, except for September, which experienced the highest number of bus complaints in over a year. And this is seasonal increases in traffic and many customers returning to work and school following some summertime service modifications. So people have been away for a while, they come back, they find the services change in September, and they aren't pleased, so they complain. In terms of actions, we're continuing to entrust improvements to Smart Trip program that allow online reloading of the accounts, as Carol mentioned in the prior committee. Once loaded, the card will add value the next time it's used, rather than having to go to the fare machine to load the value. We are beginning to use a new daily report of call center performance recently developed as a result of the customer relations and information call center evaluation that Barbara's done. Looking to October, we had a slight decline in complaints, and that was related to access service having an improved on-time performance. And that concludes the vital signs presentation.
Thank you. Any questions or comments? I've talked to both Rich and Andrea about having quarterly targets. None of the performance indicators are constant through the year. They vary by season, snow, school, even crimes vary by season. To have quarterly performance targets that reflect annual cycles and still be able to track overall annual performance, and I think you're in the process of trying to develop a framework for reflecting quarterly variances.
Yeah, we as we approach the beginning of the new calendar year, we'll be looking at our targets again and starting to move in that direction to the extent that we can.
Just want to add one thing on that. But my goal, our goal, is even when it comes to seasonality with regards to such things as mean distance between failures, HVAC failures, is to get that smoothed out. I think with the right, you know, in support of the board in terms of the resources, the right targeted preventive maintenance and the time of way will help smooth those types of variations out.
Any other questions or comments on the issue? Hearing none, I would move to the discussion of the DuPont South Entrance closure.
Good afternoon. Basically, this is to just kind of reinforce this. Is, I've been communicated out in several different venues before about the upcoming event on DuPont, and we definitely wanted to take advantage of this before the holiday season sets upon us. As we do undertake this effort on the south entrance, we are targeting, it says February 2012, we're targeting February the 1st at this stage to begin activity at this station. The north entrance will remain open. One of the caveats that we are doing on the south side is that we are modifying some of our construction efforts to ensure that we will have a point of egress at the south side of the station all the time during this major construction effort as well. So emergency egress. If we could go to the service plan, please. Basically, you know, there's going to be additional on-site staffing at this location. One of the main things is if you go out there right now, there's some escalator work taking place on the north side. We will be having on-site Ella staff during the entire revenue period at this station, as well as we'll see an increased presence of transportation staff, emergency management staff, safety, and police. We're taking this extremely serious because of the throughput of the station at seas, but also just for the simple fact that there is just a lot of other activities that we need to be addressing at the same time. One of the items that we're also going to be looking at as a contingency is naturally the power. We're putting in a permanent generator and everything else there. We'll have staff there. So just in case you see there is an issue with the Pepco and stuff, you know, regionally going forward, we'll have equipment stuff in place. And if you've been around DuPont, you've already seen stuff in the November time frame as we had originally forecasted where we're moving in and starting some of this preparatory work. One of the things that's also very important to note on this is that there is a permanent improvement at this station where we're actually putting an additional emergency walkway into this station area. It was never really part of the original calculations. It wasn't really originally done, and it'll be a permanent improvement to the site as well, which I think is also very, very positive, you know, going forward. So it's not a temporary type fix or temporary type installation. Whenever we finish the escalator work on this south side, this permanent infrastructure in some of these other areas will be retained for indefinite amount of time. Also to note is that we're also going to be staging rail cars, additional rail cars. These will have individuals that will actually be in the train consist, basically there to respond immediately. This is not where we're just parking it up and then somebody has to show up. It's part of our calculations, part of our review process to make sure that we are there to respond instantaneously as we address this. If we could go to the construction plan. Again, the February is whenever we see the official time frame, which we'll be closing down the south entrance. There was original comments about, you know, the forecast of the complexity of this work for the replacement of the three. It was originally discussed about, you know, a year because that was our, you know, that was our initial assessment based on the length and the complexity of these units. We've been able to work it down to 8 months. And through other incentives and working with accelerating work and stuff, I can state that we're targeting it 8.5 months at this stage, and that will be the new schedule. We're going to continue to start looking at, continue to look to see if we could get a little bit faster time frame to complete this project, but right now 8.5 months is the goal to be out of there. The other thing that's also taking place, if we go to the next slide, is from DuPont, you know, to be able to communicate, you know, about the walking availability. And we're also very sensitive to what's taking place at Farragut. As you know, we've got a lot of work there. We've got a main beam that's that was compromised. I know we've had to make the repairs on that, artwork, everything else. Phase one of that work before that will be wrapped up, and basically we will be out of that area. For that station to be able to function while we're in the DuPont area. Then once the DuPont work completes and we can normalize the station entrances on both sides and stuff, then we would then return to Farragut North to start phase two of this work to address the beams and everything else that we're having to replace that's overhit that's there. On the communication side, I will turn it over to the expert.
Always a learning process. So we've put together an extensive communications plan, and we've already started because this will be quite a project, and we understand the impact, great impact that it'll have on the community. We want to build awareness and understanding to explain why it is we need to close an entire entrance of a station, and to explain also the benefits of the work that will come when we're finished. But also, I would say also to express some empathy with the community. We know that this is not an easy thing for the community or the businesses to go through at this time. We want to also be able to help minimize the inconveniences as they've laid out by providing customers with actionable information, you know, perhaps consideration of using another station during this time. Maybe they might want to use bus during the time or they might otherwise have been in the station. Also just keeping them up to date so they know what's happening and using this time also to maybe communicate some safety tips and some just general tips on using escalators, things not to do so that we can keep the other ones operating on the other side. And to reassure customers about the safety precautions, if one entrance is closed, we want to be able to explain it in our conversations that we're having and in all the materials, all the precautions that we are taking that Dave just walked through for this project. Next slide. Stakeholders, we are reaching out to the business community, the community groups, with notification to not just the immediate area, but we have already provided notice throughout the district, and we've done briefings. We have a briefing coming up with the Golden Triangle. We are reaching out to businesses. We've had brief conversations with elected officials, the ANCs, neighborhood groups. We also have a weekly email that we'll start, and we're building a database on just specifically for this project. Customer notification, as you know from previous discussions that we've had, customers have indicated the best way to reach them is in the station. So we are going to take advantage of that by making announcements. We have banners planned, station station signs. We're also going to use our social media tools and our website, and we've already started putting out news releases, and we will hold media briefings along the way. Since July, as I mentioned, we already started. In September, we reached out to all of the DCANCs, the 58 different civic groups, the council, staff, the mayor's office, and, of course, you had initial board presentation on the topic. We distributed in total over 2,000 copies of our Take One that we developed that will obviously be updated now that we have this good news about the timeline being shorter. As I mentioned, we also will be briefing the Golden Triangle. I spoke just yesterday to Leona about that, and we're going to get from her email addresses of people who are attending so that we can frequently update them, and also the ANC. Next slide. This is going to be a continual process of updates of our various groups that we're targeting. We've already started. We're in the 90-day phase. And we're also going to try to take advantage of every opportunity that we have to get the messages across. As Dave and his team are working now on the emergency staircase, there's a barricade in the community, and we have used that as an opportunity to put up information about what's going on behind the barricade so that those who are walking by can see what. Also use that as information. And we are also working with our art and transit program, and we hope to be able to use any plywood that we have in the area to display local children's artwork as well during this time to engage the community also. We will begin to update our materials based upon the new schedule that we have, and of course we'll continue to build our lists and outreach. The government relations staff and community relations staff have also started going out and having conversations and briefing the community, and that will continue. 30 days out, we will do more Take Ones, continue briefings, of course have press briefings, but we'll also begin to do ads in the biweekly newspapers. And we have targeted also some bilingual, some other language newspapers, too, to make sure we have a far-reaching reach on that. And then we'll be putting up banners along the way. Next slide. Continues on 2 weeks out. We'll refresh the station signage to make sure people know that within 2 weeks' time what will happen. Again, we have ads coming out. The social media will begin the countdown to the project. We'll be able to be specific to people, you know, on the red line, but also, you know, we're also mindful that lots of people outside of that very specific neighborhood may be impacted. In the call center, we will put a, that's our interactive voice response unit. We'll put a message, IVR jargon, jargon alert. We'll put a message on for those who are calling about rail information, so they will get information about that, and then we'll refresh it 1 week out to provide another warning about the information. And then along the way, as I mentioned, we'll just continue to update message, continue to update materials for the various stakeholders in our outreach.
Mr. Chairman, could I just ask one question? Yes. This is very thorough, Barbara. When if I were to go to the trip planner on the website and put DuPont in as my destination or the place I'm going to start, will it tell me something there that's a station? Tell me some choices.
We're actually working on that functionality, but we're not sure that it'll be in place for the start of the project in February. We will have the information front and center on the homepage of the website and try to find a way to permanently incorporate it in the other pages, perhaps through house ads, until that functionality exists to bring in alerts and advisories on trip results, which will be a future improvement not just for this project, but for all projects and all impacts going forward.
I'm glad to hear that. I mean, one of the choices when I put WMATA in is click right here on the trip planner. So I suspect many people do that, bypass the home page, you go right there. So something there reminding people would be really awesome before we get the functionality.
Mr. Bolger?
Mr. Rich, we talked about this a couple months ago. It's good to see that we shaved 4 months off of a project that I still think is entirely too long to do. In high unemployment, as we heard from George Mason University, is this a 24-hour, 24/7 project?
It's not a 24-hour project. It's extended hours, extended days. And as I stated earlier, we're
extended day, Dave. What's
12 to 16 hours?
Okay.
And we are
two shifts.
We'll have different layers of staff working on this project.
All right. Has this been bid, and the bid has been accepted, and we have selected a contractor?
Yes, everything's been bid. We have everything in place. The equipment, the escalator units and stuff are produced at this stage, so we're ready to get going.
All right. Did we get an incentive-based contract, or how was this contract?
Well, that's how we've been able to bring it down from, 11 to 12 months down to 8.5 months, and we are exploring a couple more opportunities to accelerate it. Right now, it's just really getting down to availability of the skilled craft to actually do this type of work. And so we've asked them to start reaching out, on a larger span. So we're going to continue to look at this.
I didn't understand that part, Dave, at all.
Okay.
Could you just maybe rephrase that last answer?
Okay, we've got a lot of contracts, not only just at DuPont, but we've seen on the orange-blue line and throughout the rest of the system. So we have really garnered a lot of elevator, escalator supports here locally and some of the other regions. We have continued to push to see if they could bring in people in from farther distances to help us accelerate that, and that will be the next step going forward.
The Pepco does this all the time, finally. They had a crew in my neighborhood from Tennessee.
Yes.
Putting up poles, hardening, it's called. Is that... Is that unusual that we can't import workers?
Unfortunately, haven't been able to find a escalator team that does response globally throughout the country. They typically like the more sustained activity, like what we're looking for some of our possibility of our option to augment some of our services. They're a little bit more enticed to say, okay, we'll be here several years, but just to be here for 6 or 7 months, it's not quite as enticing.
Well, all right, could you just give us the weeds. What's the incentive for the contractor to get the job done faster rather than longer?
We're in negotiation, and I would really kind of prefer not to discuss my contractual amounts, in open public. But there are significant figures to try to entice this, okay. And will continue to be so.
All right.
Mr. Byrne? I use this station all the time, and frustratingly, the escalators are all working right now, which has not been my experience much until just recently. But the signage is great. I think, what's going on here, the signs that every passenger sees going in is terrific. Much better than what Metro has done historically, I think, in explaining what's happening and helping the customer understand what's really going on. And I think it goes to the discussion that some of my colleagues had earlier today about how we indicate what people are getting for their money. That this kind of information about the upgrades that are happening will give people a sense of where all these hundreds of millions of dollars are going, that they're actually going to get something better afterwards, although it's going to be very difficult for that community and that neighborhood because there's such huge usage of DuPont South, and then I guess DuPont North is going to come afterwards. So it's going to be years of hassle for that area of the city, but the signage is terrific, and all the other things you're doing with communication, I think, are great.
Thank you. I'll just say that we're continuing work on the Metro Forward campaign, and that was just the start of it, and we have another chapter of that campaign coming up after the new year, so we're looking forward to that.
One other question. I just want to make sure about Farragut North. The end of phase one means every single escalator and elevator will be in operation before you close DuPont South, that all of the construction barriers are out of the station before we do this?
Yes.
Good.
Yes, sir, I do understand, you know, the distance. We've worked with our emergency management, with our safety department. We're looking at other things. But if we do not fix that the way now that's timely, we could be in a position to have to close down the station. So we do apologize for the inconvenience that we're providing, you know, to customers. But if we do not fix those areas with what we're doing there, we're talking about some major issues which could lead down the possibility of the closing of the station, as well as the impact to some significant infrastructure of the District of Columbia, which would also be very disruptive for a lot of human services.
Out of curiosity, who failed in that process? Was it design? Was it construction? Was it permitting? Who's liable?
I don't really know. I mean, because the infrastructure, the design of the overhead, it's the only design that we have in the entire rail network. And it was the station was specially adjusted around some of the District of Columbia's existing infrastructure. So I wasn't here, you know, at that time. All I know is that we just have a failure point that needs to be addressed properly.
It was engineered by Bechtel. If I remember the I'm losing the supervising engineering staff. There were three separate international engineering firms on that. It was not a District of Columbia government project.
We haven't done the forensic analysis to answer that question, so I would not want to speculate on who was the blame.
Is it worth looking at liability?
I'd have to look at that.
Yeah.
It's a question I'd feel better about if I knew an answer. With that, how about a brief snow briefing?
Okay. All right. This is the snow briefing was just, since we had a lot of new board members and such, just to provide a general overview of what we're taking place. And of all things, this is just a guideline. A lot of people try to interpret it that this is the absolute law, this is what we do. I'm sorry, we just, you know, it's just guidelines. But they are very powerful. They're over lessons learned. And it's sadly enough that we start thinking about snow immediately after the July 4th weekend. That's when preparation and stuff that starts. What we have, when we start working on this here, it's just basically also very important to note that the dependence of the regional departments, with all the fire departments, emergency management, police departments, and everything else, this is also where this document comes into play, very important, so we can communicate across several spectrums, including the federal government. Next slide, please. Event phases, we start really even earlier. We're looking at the weather 5 to 7 days out on a regular basis during this time frame. An alert just basically means that we're starting to mobilize people and resources and stuff to start putting them, you know, in place. That's where we start impacting, you know, our direct people. We're constantly working with the local jurisdictions and stuff, you know, as well. And so there's sometimes conference calls even before some of these major events are even showing up, depending upon the magnitude of what we're seeing that potentially come our way. Preparedness, please. Next slide. Again, we closely monitor, you know, the weather. It's important for us to look at our staff. We've also found very effective that, you know, if it need be, we sometimes rent hotel rooms and everything else, so that way we can shelter people and stuff in place. Very valuable a couple of years ago, if we would have let everybody go home, nobody would have showed back up, you know. And so those are just business decisions that we just have to work. The other thing that's also very important to note here is, you know, the activation of our emergency operations center. If we do have truly have a major event, we'll have representatives from bus, from Metro Access, transit police, safety, communications, I mean, the full gauntlet, and we will be there 24/7 until it's deemed that everything, you know, is respectively clear. We also participate with all the regional bus operators, Amtrak, MARC, VIE, you know, it's truly in the OPM as well. Next slide, please. I'm not going to go through these unless I'm asked to, but these are just basically just kind of ranges. It just kind of gives you a general idea. There are six different levels of this. I would probably, could you flip to next one? 8 inches of snow. This seems to be making the press or a lot of, you know, people's conversations. One of the things that we look at when these things first start, probably the service that is most vulnerable is Metro Access. And the reason why is because a lot of times they go more into a purely residential area than, say, for instance, what a bus service, you know, naturally would. So when we look at that, we handle it kind of in the same layers and phases. We're very sensitive to Metro Access. They do a great job. They start advanced calling, notifications, and everything else of that. With JAC staff, they do an awesome job, you know, with the bus, you know, probably ice probably makes them a little bit more nervous than what snow does. But, you know, we have to balance those things, you know, accordingly. The importance of this is a continuation of working with the local jurisdictions. The 8 inches of snow, you know, for rail, to be honest with you, it really depends on the temperature, how fast the wind is going, how fast the snow and stuff, you know, is coming down. You know, just a lot of different variables, and you know, we'll monitor that. The one thing that I can say is that we have significant infrastructure improvements as well as equipment improvements through the board, you know, supporting us on these initiatives. We do things on rail cars. We've got de-icers on rail cars. We've got specially designed shoes. We have infrastructure. We have snow plow equipment that we can deploy on every rail line now. We have basically even some of our designs where it used to take us a month to get replenished parts. We can produce them in a matter of hours to help us scrape ice to keep the third rail and stuff clear. The other thing why we also take this very, very seriously is because we've been very fortunate here that at least, you know, during my tenure, we've been very sensitive. If we strand a rail train out there in the ice or whatever, you know, it's very difficult for people to walk through, you know, inches, if not feet, of snow. And it compounds. It's about ownership of our services. You know, the emergency management, the police, everybody else does a great job, but we really need to do a good job of owning that. So keeping people from being stranded. We just soon have it in the station and in between the rail alignment, because not only is it just WMATA that's impacted, but the region is generally mobilizing. It's so tough that we might take resources from a local fire department, a local, you know, police department, everything else, and that's very tough. So we're extremely, you know, sensitive to those areas right there. I would say the other thing that we've also noted is probably cleaning of platforms and everything else. For example, they used to pile all the snow in the middle of the stations. You'd have to walk through a narrow band. Now we have snow equipment that basically can blow it across the track over into WMATA property. You know, instead of moving it by bucket and by hand, we're trying to, you know, be a little bit smarter. And so that way we can keep these areas and stuff clear. We clearly will run in, you know, deeper snow levels, you know, of 8 inches, depending on what's taking place. On the rail side, it would be solely dependent upon impact of ice, but like I said, we've got a lot of different devices to keep that clear. We are sensitive to that. With the bus service and stuff, it just deals really with the priority corridors. If we go to the next slide, next one. Put this one here, it's kind of interesting, is that, you know, this is where the local jurisdictions and us working together, and the picture to the left is kind of interesting towards. We'll talk about roads and stuff, and they'll say, oh, they're clear. Jack's staff, and including our staff, everybody has now pitchers. So we'll be communicating with the local jurisdiction. They'll say, oh, yeah, it's good. You're ready to run. So we'll take a picture, and then basically that's where the command center, everything else is very important, and that information stuff goes back and forth. The other thing is that, you know, we probably did a good job of moving and clearing snow, but somebody who's a little bit bigger and a little bit faster than us comes in and has a different agenda and stuff. So these are some of the things that we're working on to, you know, further refine. And then just in closing, you know, we're ready to go this year. I think, you know, based off of what we've seen at this time, it's pretty apparent, you know, that the system has been hardened. I would say also it's not just the snow events, but, you know, looking at how we've operated through the hurricanes and the earthquakes and everything else, the investment that the board and the regions and stuff are permitting us to do, we probably just wouldn't have been in that position, you know, a few years ago. I know when I first got here in 2007, it was like, wow. Well, there is a lot of challenges and stuff that's here, and the credit goes to all the staff and all the hard work that's being placed to really to restore that. So I would just like to, you know, close with that we're here to do a good job. We have already briefed that for next year. We don't have it for 11 and 12, but some of the equipment that y'all have allowed us to buy, it's multi-use. Instead of me having a piece of equipment that just sits there year-round, I actually can do attachments and everything else. So I can use it 365 days out of the year, and I can bolt up an attachment and move on. And we're already starting to talk with some of the local jurisdictions about a true snowblower concept where we'll be able to go down the road or down our track bed, and we will displace it maybe into a road or highway, similar to what they do like in Chicago or some other places. And so we've already started the dialogue with some of the other highway departments and everything else, you know, and that's where police and emergency management come to place. So, you know, 11 to 12, we're in good shape. I mean, we've definitely improved. 12 to 13, we'll keep stepping it up, and I think then we've kind of reached a realistic plane, because we also don't want to overinvest in stuff, you know, on these things here. Well, so that concludes my report, if there's any questions.
Mr. Chairman, just to this picture of the folks standing at the bus stops, I wanted to share, in Arlington, we have a very extensive set of CERTs, community emergency response teams, folks who go through training. And in the big snow last year, we activated our CERTs to shovel out the bus stops and to shovel off the fire hydrants. And over a 24-hour period, I think they got pretty much most of the bus stops, which let our buses run and let WMATA buses run and let people be safe. So there's some things we can do locally that let this happen faster too. And people felt great about it and let the buses run. So.
Sounds like